Good evening, and welcome to yet another episode of The Last Knock, your friends in horror since 2013.
Wow.
I know, Bill, and we are in 2018.
Whoa.
You just became the Keanu GIF,
I
Bill.
Know, I was just going to say, dude, where's my car?
But in any case, it's a slightly somber mood this evening on The
Yeah.
Last Knock because we're doing our annual show about those we lost in the genre in the year 2017.
Yep.
Unfortunately, it was a busy year for dying last
For the
year.
Grim Reaper, yeah.
Yeah, and there were a lot of, you know, there were a lot of really noteworthy names that we lost. And some very influential names as well. And part of the reason I look to this show as a bit of a celebration in a way, though, because it's like, well, you're kind of honoring people who have gone on, but they left these contributions in their wake that will be around forever, you know, or as long as the earth still keeps spinning and people keep watching movies. So, and there are some out there who you may not know about or may not know by name. I went through the IMDb's list of those who died in 2017, and there were 3,800 names. So, and it's interesting to do it by the, I guess, the star meter, which ranks people from like, oh, it's the most popular person who died, to number 3,800, which is probably some poor person you never heard of before. So
yeah, and Hollywood's dropped the ball on that too. Even with the Oscars, you know, they do their 3-minute thing, and it's like they can't put everybody in there. But when you leave out, like, I'll still never forget, you know, it's like they left out Dan O'Bannon. I was just like ripping my house apart, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, like fucking Alien, yeah,
yeah,
and
all that.
I mean,
Total Recall, all the shit he did, you know.
Yeah, Total Recall was a big Hollywood movie. Yeah. So,
bitches.
Yeah, there's no justice in this world.
Never.
In any case, we're going to try and rectify that tonight. And, Bill, I'm going to go through some people who, since these are the people who tend to get a little less credit because they're behind the camera in some capacity.
We call them below-the-line talent.
There we go. That sounds good. That doesn't mean they're any less important. Sometimes, geez, I think, you know, the production designer or a composer, you know,
yeah.
They're...
Yeah, it pretty much means they're not in front of the camera, you know?
Yeah. So I'm going to go in a ascending order with these because I find it a little bit more interesting down at the... Down at the lower end of the star meter, I guess.
Yeah, where Johnny likes to hang out with all, like,
the
bad cats in the alley. Hey, alley cat, let me take you home.
I'm part of the bad cats.
Oh, yeah,
not
that's
to be
Johnny.
Confused with the bad batch.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, so first person I have is James Golf, and I had no idea who he was, but he was a producer on a bunch of low-budget horror movies, that some of which are kind of well-known. He was a producer on Death Row Diner, which I haven't seen.
Oh, man.
Have you seen that?
No.
Okay. Have you seen Hollywood Chainsaw Hookers, Bill?
I think I have that on my to-do list or something.
I really need to see that because Linnea Quigley's in it, and I love her.
Yeah.
The Ray Dennis Steckler film, Las Vegas Serial Killer, which I've seen. And he was also the producer on Video Violence 1 and 2, which has a following as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Those are all late 80s stuff.
Yeah, definitely a specific era right there.
Yeah, he was in and out, man. He did like those five and like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Patrick Tantalo, I thought this was interesting. He's a special effects person.
Mm-hmm.
And he was involved in to some capacity in Slugs the movie. Have you seen
Slugs? Yeah. Oh dude, I got all these images now. That movie was a blast.
I gotta say, Slugs, I do have a soft spot for that movie. They used to play it on cable when I was younger.
Oh my God, wow.
And the special effects, you know, are good in that film. The premise is absurd, but the effects are really good there.
Yeah, it's awful. It's awful, but it's a good kind of awful.
I mean, it's Juan Peeker Simon, and his movies just are just fundamentally problematic, but that's what makes them kind of endearing, so
slugs, they're gonna like just swarm to the theater to see this thing.
What I find fascinating about that is that it was based off of a novel. So I was like, wow, that's cool. I actually have it, but I've never read it. So but he also worked on Waxwork.
Yeah.
Gremlins 2, Edward Scissorhands, Bug, the William Friedkin film. And also Rob Zombie's Halloween 2. So those are some pretty noteworthy films he was involved with, and certainly a bunch that I like. So that's awesome. And definitely. Thank you, Mr. Tantalo. Mm-hmm. Richard Tassé, he's a production designer. I believe he was based out of Canada from the looks of some of these productions. Anytime I see Johnny Mnemonic mentioned, I have to, you know, obviously give a shout out to Johnny Mnemonic. But he also worked on The Amityville Curse, which was released this year.
Yeah.
Scanners 2.
Oh, that's right. I always forget there was a Scanners 2.
Yeah, I think there were three of those.
Oh, boy.
But those were like, I think, like the original, they were done up in Canada as well. But he was also the production designer on Fear.com, and I know people mm-hmm. hate that movie, but I think if there's one thing you can point to in that movie that is actually pretty good, it is the way it looks, I think. Yeah. There's definitely a distinct kind of urban gothic mood to that film, and I think a lot of that has to do with the production design.
Yeah.
And he was also involved... I didn't look too deeply into this, but apparently Student Bodies, but it was a TV series. Have you ever heard?
No.
Maybe it's not related to the movie, but I'm like, if that's related to the movie, I'd kind of like to see that series.
Yeah.
Bill, you're familiar with, is it Basil Gogos?
Oh my God. What a loss, man.
Yeah. Any thoughts on him?
Yes, his artwork is incredible. His detail, the depth, the emotions that he can exude from the characters he paints, whether it's a classic Bride of Frankenstein or Dracula. He uses intense colors, usually quite often I would say secondary colors, mm-hmm. Which really add to the mystique and the fantastical elements. And he'll create these portraits of these amazing, like universal monsters and then some, and he will make them real. Just beautiful work. I had the pleasure of, contacting him back and forth a little bit via Facebook
for
a while. And he was a very nice gentleman, really wonderful. And then, of course, you know, he had passed on, but his work was always tremendous. And if you look him up and just click on images, your mind will be blown. He's just a phenomenal artist, and he really brought such wonderful classical approach to painting and beyond to these classic monsters that we all love. And it's like, man, you know, it's like he almost gave them, you know, credibility through his brush. That's what I love.
That's beautifully stated, Bill. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And you know something, if you ever go to a horror convention, you can find prints of his stuff. Like, it's you can't miss it, basically.
No, you can't.
It's full on in your face, totally beautiful, totally, you know, you get a real feel for the degree of craftsmanship and skill behind it. So
absolutely. He was, I remember my heart dipping quite a bit when I found out he had passed on. It was a real sucky day.
Yeah. Byron Kaisenberry, I believe that's how you pronounce it.
Hmm.
He's a stuntman Also of the 1980s, primarily, he did stunts on the anthology film Nightmares.
Okay.
Return of the Living Dead, he did stunts.
Nice.
The movie Soul Survivor, which is a very underrated, it needs to be seen by more people. It's a real, really good sleeper horror film from Tom Eberhardt, who I believe did Night of the Comet as well. And he also did stunts in Miracle Mile, which I recently watched for the very first time.
Oh, man, what a powerful movie, man.
God, I was watching it, and then when it was over with, I was like, I just got to watch this again because I feel like I'm probably going to appreciate it more the second time around.
Yeah, it was...
That ending, man.
Don Reamer from airworthy.com, he was like, Bill, you need to see this movie, and my head exploded. And I didn't get a chance to say, you're so right about Soul Survivor. That's very underrated.
Oh, yeah. And it's there is a Blu-ray of it out from Code Red. So if you can find it, it's definitely worth picking up. I think Diabolik DVD stocks it. So
mm-hmm. That's cool.
And that's worth a blind buy, I would say. It's a lot like Carnival of Souls, which I love. So I'm definitely in like Flynn with that one. So, Bill, I thought I'd mention this person not because he was involved in film per se, mm-hmm. but because I think he was a bit at the forefront of sort of the revival of the shock rock music movement.
Sure.
It was a Scott Mitchell Pruteski, which you probably better know as Daisy Berkowitz from Marilyn Manson. He was the bass player. No, he was guitar.
Yeah.
Twiggy was bass. But yeah, you can still hear his contributions to the horror genre through the music of Marilyn Manson, mm-hmm. who's, you know, pretty ubiquitous when it comes to like horror soundtracks from like the mid to late 90s through the 2000s. So David Lewis Udall, he worked in the sound department. I don't know specifically in what capacity, but he worked on films like Starship Troopers, The Fifth Element, and even Escape from New York. So a bit more sci-fi there, but there's some horror connections in those films, definitely.
Yeah.
Thomas E. Sanders, another production designer. He worked on Crimson Peak, which I loved from a few years back. But he also worked on a film you liked a lot, Bill, which was Coppola's Dracula.
Oh, that was so much fun, man. So much fun.
Yeah, I need to watch that again.
It's just, that's one of those, what are you doing? Nothing. Hey, let's put in Dracula and just break out the popcorn.
And I'm probably going to say this guy's name wrong.
Go ahead,
I believe it's Daniel Licht, L-I-C-H-T.
Mm.
He is probably most well-known for composing the score to the TV series Dexter. And for as much as Dexter went down the tubes in the last season, I still got to say one of the constants of that show was the really effective music that was used in it. So yeah. I think it could have been that last season could have been that much worse without it. So I'll put it nicely, kind of. And I know a lot of people, you know, still are fond of that show and that character. So I thought that was worth mentioning.
He did a lot of work. He has like 67 credits to his name, including Hellraiser Bloodline.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Children of the Corn 3.
Oh, those Dimension films, yeah.
Yeah, Children of the Night. And his first, it wasn't his first, but he did an episode of episode one of Monsters, the TV series, back in 1988.
Oh, okay. Did you like that series as much as Tales from the Dark Side, Bill?
I don't really recall checking it out. I have to, that was a reminder right there.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah.
I still gotta watch Tales from the Dark Side.
Oh, man, dude, come on.
I only saw the one episode, which is apparently very popular, the In the Closet episode. Yeah, with the little thing. But
There are many more, Johnny, many more.
I know that thing was on for like many seasons, so anyway, Carolyn Cronenberg, who,
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
obviously wife to David Cronenberg, but she also inhabited various crew functions on some of his films.
Is that
And
his wife or his sister? Am I getting confused?
I believe Denise Cronenberg is his
Yes,
sister,
thank you. I did get confused.
the costume designer, yeah.
Yeah.
But she actually produced and directed some of the supplements on the DVD for A History of Violence, and some of those supplements are really nice.
Whoa.
On that, yeah, like the documentary about the making of the film is pretty cool. So it's like that, and I feel bad for David, obviously, because it's a
Yeah.
hard loss.
Sure, and the whole family, Brandon and his son who brought us antiviral.
Yeah,
I
that's
can't
true.
imagine. I can't imagine.
Raul Davalos, he's an editor.
Yes.
He edited the Guillermo del Toro film Chronos,
Yeah.
the Stephen King adaptation Dreamcatcher, which I have a soft spot for.
God, Patooey.
You know what they should do? They should do
No.
it as like a limited Netflix series. They should redo it, but that's just my feeling.
Oh, I like that.
The cast in that film was fucking great, though. That's
Yeah,
another
but the
thing I like about.
story's, forget it.
Well,
Whatever.
they were condensing an 800-page book down to like a 2.25-hour movie. I was like, how's that gonna work? And it
It
didn't. So,
doesn't. Yes,
yeah.
exactly.
But he also worked on the April Fool's Day remake, which I
Nice. Oh, the
haven't
remake.
seen.
Ooh.
Yeah, the remake. And he also worked on a Wrong Turn 3. So definite horror connections there. Bill, another artist. Bernie Wrightson.
I know. Oh my God.
Any thoughts on Bernie?
Yeah, Bernie was like the man who did brought us like oh God, he did so much, man. I'm just thinking automatically, I think of his Heavy Lines. He was my favorite artist, along with the wonderful Joe Kubert Sr. And they just did this wonderful, deep line work that really made the images pop. And again, just like Basil, you could just like pop in his name, and you'll see all of these incredible things. He did horror comic books. He's done Batman. I mean, the list goes on. Swamp Thing and Doctor Strange. I mean, it's endless. Look at his skeletons. Look at like the zombified elements with like the skin coming off and all. And it's such detailed comic art. It's not, this flash in the pan cheesy stuff. And I know he inspired a lot of other young artists to like, yeah, let's go detail. Let's like make this each panel a piece of art on its own. And that's what he did. All of his comic books just really pop, so, oh, man.
Yeah, and you know what, Bill? I like how he did the poster art for Creepshow.
Yeah, oh man, absolutely right there. There you go.
And how that like harkened back to the old like Vault of Horror and Tales from the Crypt style of artwork, which was awesome. And the first thing I ever saw by him was his illustrations in the Stephen King novella Cycle of the Werewolf, and I still have that book, and the illustrations are awesome in it.
Yeah, he's just it's just incredible. Really, just punch in his name, click images, and like the first one that comes up is something that was published in the LA Times, and it's what you would call it. It looks like it's Dr. Frankenstein in his laboratory. And it check it out, your mind will just explode. It must have taken him years to do this thing. The detail is insane. There's like a million beakers. I think the bride is on the slab. And it's just, it's insane. The depth. Yeah, he was just so cool.
Yeah.
I just loved that, the line work. Him and, like, you know, even, yeah, him and Kubert were always my favorites.
Anyway, nice.
I can't keep looking because I'm just going to get lost.
Yeah, I know. I got you, Bill. William Peter Blatty, I'm getting to two bigger ones here, who's probably most well-known as the author of The Exorcist, and the rest is kind of history as far as the film. And the book was a phenomenon, too, before the film came
Absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely. I remember my sister reading it and saying she couldn't sleep. Yeah.
And Blatty also, he came from an interesting time because Hollywood let him adapt and direct The Ninth Configuration, which was a book he wrote. And I thought that was so strange that Hollywood would be like, hey, you wrote this book. Hey, here, come and make this movie. But I guess that was based off the success of The Exorcist, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But he also, later on, he adapted his book Legion into Exorcist 3 back in, I think, 89 or 90. And a lot of people have fond memories of that film, and there are definitely some mm-hmm. effective moments in it. The great George C. Scott.
George.
Yeah.
The Changeling. Sorry, just had to shut that one out.
Did you ever see The Hospital, Bill? That's not a horror film, but...
No. I don't know.
But I think Diana Rigg is in it, too.
Oh, I'll watch it now.
Yeah. See, I know how to get you to get your interest in stuff. But
Mrs. Peel, you need me. Sorry, go ahead, man.
But in any case, Mr. Blatty will be very missed.
Oh, yeah.
And Bill, you know this person. I know you know this person. Therese Duprez. She was a production designer on many noteworthy films. Black Swan, Stoker.
Yes.
Summer of Sam. The Doom Generation. That was probably the first time I saw her name in the credits when I was like 16 or 17. Mm-hmm. But and I wrote down that she was the production designer on every great indie film of the 90s because she's got a long list of great credits to her name, including also the film Living in Oblivion, which is a great send up of making a low budget movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh man.
So what do you got, Bill?
Nothing. I got nothing.
Okay.
No, I was just it was just because of certain things going on in my my life. I was actually looking at a lot of the stars that maybe a lot of people didn't expect to have had appeared in horror films. So but I just learned of someone else today who had passed that I was surprised by, but she does have sort of a name, so all right, well, screw it, I'm gonna go for that anyway. No, because I was working on setting up your post for the that you've done on Pet Sematary 2.
Okay.
I was looking up Darlene Flugel, and I just found out that she passed away December 15th.
Oh God, yeah, I saw that recently. Yeah. Oh shit, yeah.
Yeah, she several years ago she was diagnosed as having early onset Alzheimer's, and which is deplorable. And she's actually from where I went to school. She's from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and my gosh, she was the mother in Pet Sematary 2. But she was also in many other films, of course, you know, To Live and Die in L.A. I know she got a lot of people. That's what attracted. That's what got her in the mind of other people. But she was also early on Eyes of Laura Mars, which is a nice, bizarre little movie. She was in the.
I forgot she was in that one.
Yeah. She was in the Twilight Zone TV series. She was also in Alfred Hitchcock Presents when they revamped it in 86.
Nice.
Yeah. Deadly Stranger. And Pet Sematary 2, of course. Slaughter of the Innocents. And what was it? Yeah, she was in the Darkman 3, Die, Darkman, Die video from 1996. She played Dr. Bridget Thorne.
You know, I actually heard those direct-to-video Darkman sequels were pretty good.
I don't know. I have to check them out. But that was her last feature, so to speak. She did a short after that, and then that was it. But very beautiful woman. She started out as a model way back. She was up to make $300 an hour, and she was like, ah, I've had enough. I got to do something else. And she got into acting. And so that was, I was surprised to see that. But I think this is also a really big surprise to a lot of people. This woman passed away also in December. Rose Marie, she died of natural causes at 94 years old. And a lot of people associate her with the Dick Van Dyke Show and comedy. But she also did the voice in Psycho in 1998. And she was in the
Oh, I
movie.
didn't know that.
Yeah. And
All
she
right.
was in a movie that a lot of people like, yeah, it's not that great, but you got to see it. Witchboard from 1986. So, yeah, Rose Marie, baby.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry she's no longer with us.
Yeah. That sucks.
Bill, I always wondered about the voice at the end of the Psycho remake, and I just assumed that you know what? I guess I'm stupid. I was assuming that Vince Vaughn was throwing his voice, but there was no way he could probably do that.
Well, he didn't. So it's like mystery solved.
Vince Vaughn can be pretty amazing, but not that amazing, so.
Yeah. And I know a lot of people heard of this passing of Heather Menzies Urich. She passed away at 68 due to brain cancer, which is horrible. She was in the television movie which is fantastic and freaked me out as a kid. Check it out. It's really awesome. Of course, she was in Piranha in 1978.
Ooh,
And
yeah.
yeah, and in a movie that I love and I want to get on DVD, it's not necessarily a horror, although I considered it to be, and it really freaked me out as well. It was Endangered Species, 1982, which is pretty damn cool flick. And she was neat. She was just a cool woman, and she really rocked it in Logan's Run, which is where, most people know her from. The science fiction film from the 70s, which was which might not, a lot of people think, well, it was 70s and it doesn't look that hot now or whatever, but it had a really cool theme, so
Oh, wow.
yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Let's see, who else do I got? Robert Guillaume. A lot of people remember as Benson, and Benson from the television series Soap. Yeah, he died at 89, complications from prostate cancer. And he was in a horror film, The 13th Child, which I've heard is not very good, but it's about the New Jersey Devil. So if it's New Jersey, I'm all there. And so that was his claim to horror, or his support of it. And Johnny, do you know this guy's name? Roy Dotrice?
Wasn't he like a television actor like in the 70s?
Yeah, he was. He passed away also 94. He was in Tales from the Crypt, Tales from the Dark Side, and this one I haven't seen, Late Night Horror.
He wasn't in Satan's School for Girls, was he?
I don't recall seeing that. Because believe me, I'd
Okay.
be writing that one down.
I might be getting mixed up with someone else, yeah.
No, that's fine. And those are about it for some of the people who you might not expect in the horror genre, unless you have some others you can add to that, Johnny. I don't know.
I'll just rattle some off, Bill.
Because I have bigger names I'm just holding out on.
Then I'll move my way up pretty fast then.
Sure.
Not a horror film, but a lot of cinephiles love this movie for its shock value, and I rewatched it like a month or so ago, and goddamn, it still holds up. Danny Mills, who you might know as Crackers from Pink Flamingos,
Oh my
passed away.
gosh. Yeah. Oh
Do my
boy.
balls, mama.
Oh man, I got pink flamingos in my head now. Oh, Divine, I miss you. Sorry, go ahead.
But in any case, Elizabeth Kemp, who was in He Knows You're Alone, the slasher film, which marked the debut of Tom Hanks.
Ah.
Yeah, also, she was also in the film The Killing Hour, which was by the same director, Armand Mastroianni.
Oh, yeah.
And let me see what else I got here. The Killing Hour is actually a really good film. It's a Blue Underground. It's on Blue Underground if you want to take a look at it.
Yeah.
Haruo Nakajima, who might be better known as the guy who inhabited the big rubber monster outfits in
yes.
some of those Godzilla movies. He was also in The Seven Samurai as well. So,
dude, I mean, that's a brilliant film, of course, but like, okay, you're going to play Godzilla and you mean I get to destroy all of these cool models? Yeah. Oh man, I'd be loving it. I'd be like, that would have been the coolest thing, man.
I think every kid's dream is to like just wreak havoc on stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely, man.
R.D. Reed, I don't know what the R.D. stands for, but he was the gay church organist who is one of the survivors in Dawn of the Dead 2004.
Uh-huh.
He was also the deaf-mute Amish man in Diary of the Dead.
Wow.
And he also played a flophouse manager in the movie Stuck. He's the guy who chases Stephen Ray out of the flophouse at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, yeah. He caused all the problems.
Pretty much setting into play a series of unfortunate events.
Yeah. Totally.
Conrad Brooks, who was most well known for his collaborations with the late great Ed Wood. You can see him playing a cop in Plan 9 from Outer Space, among other places. And he was a really big convention personality for many years, up to the end of his life. So, Ray Lovelock, who was in a couple of Italian horror films that I like. He was in the film Autopsy, which was a bit of a giallo film. And he was also in Let Sleeping Corpses Lie, also known as The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue. I always thought he looked a little bit like Brad Pitt, so I think that's a huge compliment before Brad Pitt was Brad Pitt. So
indeed.
Federico Lupi, who is probably most well known for his for two collaborations with Guillermo del Toro. I believe he was the grandfather. I forget the character's name. He's the one who gets addicted to blood in Kronos.
Right.
And he was also in Pan's Labyrinth, which was a hugely well-regarded Del Toro film.
Mm-hmm. His best to date.
Yeah. Oh, I got to see The Shape of Water.
Yeah, same here.
It's not playing anywhere near me yet. But, well, Bill, I know you can speak to this one a little bit. Mary Soni, who was very young. I think she was in her 20s. She was one of the sisters in Dogtooth.
Oh man, I didn't know that.
I think it happened earlier in the year. I don't know what happened.
Holy crap, man.
Any thoughts on Dogtooth, Bill? And
Dogtooth is just phenomenal, man. I gave that 4.5 stars out of 5.
And, yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Oh, you're right. I do remember her passing. Yeah. That sucks. I can't recall why, though.
Yeah, I don't want to jump to some conclusion, so, because I don't remember.
Yeah, that was, she was, wait, she played the older daughter, or?
She was the brunette.
So she was the younger daughter.
I believe so.
Was that, what was the name again?
Mary Soni.
Yeah, Mary
Soni
with the TS, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man, let's see what I got. Yeah, because she was born in Greece in 87. She had taken her own life.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't know how, but oh man, that movie's so brilliant too.
Oh, everything about
crushed it.
Yeah, everything about that movie is great, and when I see something like that, it's like she had, you know, it's a cliche, but it's like she had so much she could have done and probably would have done if things had been different maybe for her. So that's a shame.
Yeah, I know. Oh,
well, Bill, Brent Briscoe, you've probably seen him in a bunch of stuff. He was in Frailty.
Yeah,
he was in
a great movie.
Yeah, he was also in Mulholland Drive at the very beginning with Robert Forster. And he was also in The Green Mile, Another Day in Paradise, Zombievers, and he was also in Twin Peaks The Return. So I guess I really got to get on that. So, yeah.
Yeah, me too. I gotta. I'm on episode 5. I gotta keep moving on.
I did pick up the Blu-ray box set recently. I just need to get around to watching it. Teresa Ann Savoy Bill, who you probably would know best from Caligula as Caligula's sister, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, she only did 18 movies, but she also did the sort of Nazi exploitation film Salon Kitty, which was it was all right. It was another Tinto Brass film.
Yeah.
So, Tomas Milian, who was in many like spaghetti westerns and action films of the 70s, horror fans might know him best from Don't Torture a Duckling as the reporter. Martelli, and he also showed up later in Steven Soderbergh's Traffic.
Yeah.
Dahlia Lavi, who was in one of my favorite Mario Bava films, The Whip and the Body.
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill.
Yeah.
But she's it's a very interesting character she plays in that film, and it. I guess it sort of foreshadows some notions of masochism in film, actually.
Absolutely.
Depending on how you read it. So, and the great Christopher Lee is in that as well. So.
Yeah, that's really a cool. Yeah, wow, what a role he plays, huh?
Oh yeah, it's definitely not what you. It's a very aggressive, sadistic role he's playing in that film. Yeah.
Oh man, I loved it. Sorry, go ahead, man.
Well, Bill, Martin Landau, I'm not sure if he was on your...
Absolutely.
Well, what do you want to say about Martin?
Oh, man. I love... Space 1999. That's all I got to say. No, anyway. Yeah, he passed on at 89. He was in a lot. I mean, he was, you know, a lot of people, you know, remember him, I'm sure, from the Mission Impossible, the original series, which you could find in syndication, of course. But he was in The Outer Limits, The Twilight Zone... the 1979 version of The Fall of the House of Usher.
Okay.
I'm going to skip this one because I want to go... I am going to mention it now. A movie called Without Warning, also known as Alien Encounters from 1980, which is a blast. It still freaks me out about an alien. You know, this was pre-Predator, man. This was an alien coming down just to hunt humans. And Alone in the Dark in 82, and The Being of 1983. So he was in...
man, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's why he's like, yeah, I'm not going to do horror anymore. And and he moved on, and of course he won his Oscar, the only person to win an Oscar for portraying another actor, Bela Lugosi, in the movie Ed Wood. And he was just fantastic, so...
Yeah, that's a great tribute to Lugosi, and also a great tribute to Landau.
And his wonderful daughter, Juliet Landau. You know, she's had a bunch of wonderful things to say about her father, and you know, we know her as Drusilla, of course, from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and the Toolbox Murders.
That's true.
Absolutely. Yeah. So. Yeah, so sorry for her, and of course his former wife Barbara Bain.
Well, the next one I have, Bill, is Michael Parks. For some reason I didn't know he passed away.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I didn't know him. I'm like, he's not on my list.
But he had sort of a career resurgence within the past decade or so, or maybe 20 years, because Tarantino was like, oh, hey, I like this guy from all these old movies. And you started bringing him in to like, you know, Kill Bill from Dusk Till Dawn and stuff like that. And he's great. Kevin Smith sort of did likewise with Tusk and Red State, which I think is a fantastic performance from him, honestly.
Yeah, his performances were fantastic. He was just He's just awesome.
Yeah, I think he liked to. I got the impression that he kind of liked to challenge himself, especially like, you know, within the past 10 years or so.
Yeah, and really immerse himself in those roles because he owned them, man.
Yeah, and you know, a performance I really loved by him, and I know you're not a big fan of the movie, Bill, but I think he gives a very strong dramatic performance in the We Are What We Are remake as sort of this really distraught father who happens to be a doctor who doesn't know what happened to his daughter, but there's a real horrible story behind it, and when he uncovers it, it's like, yeah, he really conveys like a grieving father, but just a very determined individual very well, I think. So.
Mm-hmm.
Powers Booth, Bill.
Yeah. Oh man. He was in so many cool things: television, movies. Movie Frailty again comes up, and it was just he just had to, again. He had this presence, you know. He had this stature about him. And I know he was in that movie that you really love when they were down in Cajun country and doing his National Guard thing. I always forget the name of that movie.
Southern Comfort, baby.
How can I forget? Now I'm thirsty. But anyway, that's a whole other story. Powers Booth was great. Even, you know, when he did the Deadwood, you know, on series, the Western.
I still got to watch that.
What? Oh, my gosh. Dude,
I know.
Get on it.
Hey, Bill, you know what I discovered recently?
What?
William Sanderson, who was also in Deadwood, and he was J.F. Sebastian in Blade Runner.
Yeah, absolutely.
He fucking lives in Harrisburg.
Yep, and he told me that he was able to buy that house because of Deadwood.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay. He said because he was finally getting steady work. He was getting a steady paycheck, And he told me some interesting things about no one knows what really happened. Cause I was like, why did it go off the air? And he was like, one producer like destroyed the set and it was just like, that was it. Yeah. But now that, you know, the Deadwood movies apparently still on the minds of people. So cause he's been in a million things and he's just amazing.
Yeah, definitely. I'd love to meet him someday.
He's a great guy to talk to. Him and his wife, beautiful people.
Yeah, I would probably just fanboy out. It would probably be very unappealing if I got near him. So
no, well, I talked to him for a half hour. There was no line. We just sat down and talked. It was great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Before I had the show, could have done an interview.
Yeah. Well, hindsight is 50-50.
And technology.
that too. We're still struggling with that beast. Yeah.
Whatever.
Rance Howard, who. Maybe most people know him as Ron Howard's dad.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Howard.
You know what? And I saw that he had 280 credits, and they dated back to 1956.
Wow, man.
Bill, what did you know Rance Howard from? I know you know him from at least a couple things.
Jeez, man, you put me on the spot.
Well, I'll talk. Okay.
Well, I do know one thing that was cool. He told his sons. If they weren't cool with doing the acting thing, they didn't have to do it. And it was just, and I think that's why they both kept their heads on their shoulders and they both ended up having great careers and, you know, making that bizarre transition from child actor to either adult actor or director.
Well, and you look at it now and, you know, Ron Howard starred on Andy Griffith and now he's directing the next, one-off Star Wars movie, so you know.
Yeah, and his brother Clint Howard and a lot of really cool stuff. And
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh man, gosh, yeah, he was an actor, man. Jeez, Louise.
Well, you know, I almost think he might have been like a Jeffrey Lewis kind of Bill because we, you know, unfortunately, we lost him. I think a year or so, and he had a huge number of credits, but he also had a huge family he was probably supporting as well.
Right.
Through his gigs, so
yeah. Holy crap, man, this list, I can't go through this list, it's like insane.
Well, I'll just highlight some, Bill. He was in the Toolbox Murders remake.
Yep, I just saw that.
And he was in the Psycho remake as Mr. Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
He was also in, I'd forgotten this, he was in Ed Wood as the meat baron who gives Ed Wood the money to make Bride of the Monster.
Oh, wow.
He's like the one who's saying, oh, it's got to end with a big explosion.
Yeah. And he was also in Psycho 1998.
And he was also, and I also didn't know this, he's the irate farmer in the movie Chinatown who crashes the city council meeting.
Oh my God, that's him! Oh dude, that's a claim to fame right there.
Oh my God, yeah, where he comes in with like the goats and stuff, and he starts yelling at Mulray and everything. Oh, it's great. Yeah. And Jack Nicholson's just kind of sitting there bemused by the whole scene, so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bill, go ahead.
No, he was in Tales from the Crypt too, man.
Oh, jeez. Wow. Well, I've got five more actors, Bill.
Keep going, man. I don't care. I'll jump in.
And you know this one with great affection.
I think I know who this is.
We're getting up there. Yeah. Harry Dean Stanton. Yeah.
91, Natural Causes, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, you saw him in Twin Peaks and a million other things, but Alien, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Oh, man. And, of course, Repo Man.
Yes. Yeah. No commies in my car. No Christians either.
He crushed it. He was in fact, I lost two of my favorite, you know, character actors this year in 2017, and he was one of the two. In mm-hmm. fact, they were both in the same film, Alien, so I know where we're going. But, you know, and he was in David Lynch loved him. He was in so many David Lynch films, and, you know, whether a small part or a large part, you know, he's one of those guys you just could not be ignored, you know, at any age. And he was an excellent photographer, too.
Mm-hmm.
Just really fantastic, just cool as hell, did his own thing. He was I think he played music too. He did it all, you know. Watch him in Paris, Texas, your mind will be blown as well. Excellent. Excellent for drama, comedy, you name it, he did it, he brought it, he crushed it.
And he also collaborated with John Carpenter a couple of times as a Brain in Escape from New York. And one of my favorite Carpenter films, he played the insurance investigator Junkins in Christine.
Yeah.
Oh, so his exchange with Keith Gordon in the parking lot is great. It's like, it's almost like he's playing it like noir kind of in a weird way. So, but yeah, definite great presence. You got that face you can't forget for sure. But yeah, he was a great actor. A lot of memories with him.
Love that guy. Loved him.
Miguel Ferrer, Bill.
Oh, another one I loved.
Yeah. God. Talk about a distinct voice. Yeah.
Yeah, and he passed away from throat cancer at 61.
Ah, jeez.
Yeah, he was in Tales from the Crypt, and of course he was in Twin Peaks and just phenomenal. But he was in Deep Star 6. This movie's awful, but he's fantastic in it. Hard Ride to Hell from 2010.
Okay.
But he's in one of my favorite vampire films of all time, The Night Flyer from 1997. It is great. It's a blast. It's one of those under-the-radar horror movies that people need to see. So, highly recommended, The Night Flyer.
Yeah, and he was also... RoboCop.
Robo, yeah. Oh, man. What a role he played. That's when I first fell in love with him way back.
Yeah.
You know, and...
No, that's definitely it's definitely a standout performance. I can see why Hollywood, why people were like, oh, let's work with this guy. Yeah,
he had this flair, you know, he had this flair in his delivery, like with the dialogue. Like, I think you could feed him crappy dialogue, and just the way that he delivered it with his speed and all, he would make it resonate and just knock you out.
Yeah, he played I Don't Give a Fuck so well.
Yeah.
You know, it's like some of the, even in Twin Peaks, which obviously I think he was probably having a great time in Twin Peaks. But when I was rewatching the original series recently, I was just like, you know what? I like this guy. I don't care that he's an asshole. I'm kind of liking him because he's an asshole. So,
exactly. Yeah. Oh, he was great. He killed it in that series, man.
Yeah, it was always like a bright spot when he showed up. So,
yep.
While Bill continuing with the alien connection, John Hurt.
Yeah, 77, pancreatic cancer.
Jeez.
Yeah, he was, and of course, you know, he reprised his role in was it Spaceballs? You know, he does the hello, my baby. Hello. So anyway, yeah, the chest burster scene, you know, is what he's most known for. Second in command of the Nostromo in the original Alien. But he was also in The Ghoul in 1975, After Darkness in 1985, and he played a great part in a movie that doesn't get enough credit, Aaron Kruger's The Skeleton Key from 2005.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of his performance as Christopher Marlowe in Jim Jarmusch's Only Lovers Left Alive.
Man. Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that he did was he was so dedicated. He was in a dramatic film taking place in Ireland called The Field. Mm-hmm. And his character had a front tooth missing. So he shows up on set. He had the tooth pulled, man. He's like, oh, I don't want that black makeup crap on air. This has got to look right. And then he had, you know, and then he had a fake tooth put in there later. I'm like, holy crap. But, you know, and everybody thinks, wow, that's hardcore. But he wasn't like, yeah, have something pop out of my chest for real. Did he do that? No.
Though, you know, he sold it like it was coming right out of his chest.
Man, absolutely. Sure. The twitching and the blood spatter.
I know I've mentioned it before, Bill, but that scene gets me every time I watch it.
Yeah, it's iconic, man.
I know it's coming and I jump every time I see it. So,
yeah.
Continuing with the Johns, yep. John Hurd.
Yeah, 1971. I mean, he was 1971. 71 from a heart attack.
And I didn't even think he was that old, honestly.
No, he always looked good and all, but I mean, you never know, man. But
yeah, that's true.
But he was in Tales from the Dark Side.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Jesus, man.
Tales from the Dark Side, Chud from '84.
Yeah.
And of course, later on, he talk about a long gap between horror films from Chud to Would You Rather in 2012.
Well, Would You Rather is great. Yeah,
it is. And Chud definitely has its moments.
Oh, Chud is just a lot of fun. Yeah. And you know what, Bill? I think my favorite performance of his is probably in Cat People, the remake.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that movie a lot, and what Paul Schrader does with the, you know, with that classical story and sort of ramps it up for the 80s. So,
oh, absolutely, man.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess the last one, Bill, that yeah. I have, I don't know if you have more, but we did a show about, we did a show about him, and, you know, perhaps maybe we could each give our legacy film for Bill Paxton.
Legacy film. Okay, I got it. Boom.
What will you most remember Bill Paxton by?
It's funny because, you know, everybody, oh, Leah Hudson and Aliens and all that fun stuff. And I remembered him right away from, you know, Terminator as one of the street punks. Mm-hmm. But his movie, Frailty, he destroyed it. And I know a lot of people would say Near Dark, but Frailty is amazing. He directed it. It was an all Texas cast, including Powers Booth and, you know, Matthew McConaughey. And company. It is a brilliant film, really tough to watch for a lot of people, but it's just, he really destroyed it. And that's when his cool factor went way up for me. So, it was just brilliant. To me, it's one of the greatest horror films ever made. So,
yeah, it's really kind of like a slow burn psychological thing one.
Yeah, and it crushes your skull in big time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it's a great performance also from, again, Powers Booth and young Matthew McConaughey as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And,
so what's yours, man? It wouldn't. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, okay. You know,
I know a lot of people would say Near Dark, probably, horror fan-wise.
Yeah, you know, as far as horror goes, I would probably say Near Dark. It's just a... kind of a wild and crazy performance that he gives in that film. It's just, you kind of can't.
Such a bastard, man, in that film.
Yeah, he's not a good guy.
No, and he's with like, you know, part of the cast from Aliens, man. Lance Henriksen and
Jeanette Goldstein.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'd probably say Near Dark for the horror. I really liked his performance in Sam Raimi's A Simple Plan. I know you're not a big fan of that one, but as a drama, I think that kind of showed some additional range for him and showed him kind of getting out of the genre. So I think that's a good film as well for that.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. I think that's when, you know, he showed a lot of people like, I'm serious about this thing and, you know, I'm an adult and I'm not Hudson, you know?
Oh yeah, exactly.
And Billy Bob Thornton in that movie, just wow. He was amazing.
Tragic. Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, wow, what a role to play, man. He just destroyed it again.
I can't do this anymore, Hank. I can't do this.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, that was frighteningly good, Johnny.
I can't really do Sling Blade, but I can do A Simple Plan. So.
Yeah, well, dude, I got a little chill, man. That freaked me out.
Well, Bill, I have some directors, and I think you do too.
Yeah, I have a couple.
Yeah, so I'm going to go through some of these a bit quickly here as well. Yeah. I was kind of upset to see Christopher Spieth passed away. I think he only did one film, or if he did more than one film, there were very few films, but he did this great low budget independent film called Malatesta's Carnival of Blood, which, you want to look at DIY filmmaking. That's
yeah. What a title, man. You can't beat a title like that.
Yeah. And it has a Herb Villechaize from Fantasy Island in it as well. Tattoo.
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
But Bill, you like head fuck movies. It's definitely a head fuck kind of movie.
You
so.
Own it, man? Because I gotta borrow that thing.
Oh, I do. I'll let you borrow it. Yeah,
you're the man.
Yeah, actually, if anybody's interested, the good folks at Arrow put it out in the States, so I'm happy about that.
Excellent.
Kim was a director who did Yongari, Monster from the Deep, and Kanga, and it looked like he did a bunch of big South Korean monster movies from like the 60s and 70s.
Yep.
Bill, I don't know if he did any horror, but I've heard you mention him a couple times on the show. Radley Metzger passed away.
No. Camille 2000, baby. Oh, man.
Yeah.
He stopped directing because he said, I said everything I needed to say. you know, the Licorice Quartet, you know, with Lynn Lowry. Oh, man. Yeah, The Princess and the Call Girl was his last film. He didn't do any horror, but he's always worth mentioning. The Alley Cats, wow. Oh, Teresa and Isabel. Oh, man, all of these are just, like, huge. The Image, that's a big one for him.
Mm.
But if you like a little BDSM, a little lesbianism, you know, 60s, 70s style, European-esque, with sometimes some very bold shots, like out in public, a woman, you know, being forced to urinate and stuff
oh,
like
wow.
that. Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't just like, you know, like, you know, this isn't like, you know, like Candy and all that crap. You know, he did some pretty heavy stuff. And, yeah, wow, man. Yeah, he was something else. You're pretty much watching the same movie over and over again, but I still, like, I couldn't stop watching. But anyway, that's just me.
yeah, that is what it is, Bill. I figured I'd bring him up because...
Oh, man!
Yeah. And this is one I forgot about, and shame on me, because whether or not you think he made positive contributions to the horror genre, that's up for debate. Mm. But the Italian director Umberto Lenzi,
yes,
probably most notorious for Make Them Die Slowly.
Mm-hmm.
But he also did a bunch of stuff in the horror and giallo genres. He did Spasmo, Eyeball, Nightmare City's a hoot.
Yeah, Eaten Alive.
Yes, and actually Severin is putting out a pretty sweet-looking special edition of it soon.
Ooh, Nightmare Beach.
Seven Bloodstained Orchids.
Yeah, and don't forget Orgasmo.
Sorry. Yeah, that's right.
I just had to bring that one up.
I think that had Carol Baker in that, actually. Yeah.
Yes, it did. She was the lead with Luke Castell.
And I believe he also did Hitcher in the Dark, which I saw Dave Kay watched recently. So.
Oh, man. Dave Kay, man.
He's the unstoppable fiend, yeah.
He did Orgasmo and Spasmo. And Paranoia. Holy crap.
Well, I think Paranoia was an alternate title for Orgasmo, actually. No?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, never mind then. I just wish they would merge the two and make it Orgaspasmo.
Whoa.
But anyway, sometimes it's actually funny to listen to interviews with this guy because, you know, in the Nightmare, there's an interview with him on the Nightmare City DVD where he essentially takes credit for the infected zombie as a method of creating zombies a la 28 Days Later. So
yeah.
He's a bit ostentatious in his statements sometimes, but it's actually, I can't deny that it's pretty amusing to watch. So, and he definitely made a lot of movies that a lot of people know about, especially those who are, you know, fond of Italian horror.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
The next one, Bill, is Uli Lamell, the German filmmaker.
Mm.
My favorite film of his is Tenderness of the Wolves. Did I let you borrow that?
Yeah. Oh, I watched that on television, man.
Okay. What do you think of that movie?
It's all right. No, I'm kidding. It's, no, Tenderness of the Wolves is an interesting film. That's for sure. It was really cool. It was almost like it was a different type of a fairy tale, if, I may say.
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, I think he was kind of open about the fact that it was inspired by Fritz Lang's M, actually.
Yeah.
So it sort of updates Fritz Lang's M with a sort of a 70s art house / exploitation sensibility, kind of.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, because this was it premiered in West Germany, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, it was interesting what he did. It's... I gave it 4 out of 5 stars, man.
Yeah, I think my rating is somewhere around there too. Actually,
no, I apologize, man. You did loan me this one.
Yeah, it's been a while. But yeah, I think that's probably his best film. He also did an interesting horror film called The Boogeyman from 1980, which has problems, but the concept behind it is very creative. And some of the stuff he does is very unconventional in that film, so I'd say it's worth a watch for that. But
yeah. he was a big time actor too.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot. Yeah, before he got into directing.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, he's even in whatchamacallit, Boogeyman Reincarnation, which is completed. And he acts.
I think he worked also with was it Rainier Fassbinder?
Mm.
Was also making stuff at the time. He had a small part in Tenderness of the Wolves.
Right.
Yeah, unfortunately, Lamell is mostly known these days for kind of dragging his reputation through the mud. He spent like 2004 through 2012 making these really super low budget, really awful direct-to-video serial killer.
Yeah. Manson Family Cult and all, DC Sniper.
I only watched Zodiac Killer, and my God, that's like one of the worst things I've ever seen.
Man.
It's barely a step up from a home movie. It's that bad.
Wow. You just hang out with Jess Franco.
Well, Uli has like maybe 3 or 4 pretty good movies. Jess Franco has like maybe 1 good movie. So there's that
one good one. Okay, let me know what that one is later.
I have maybe 2 of his. There are maybe 2 Jess Franco movies I like. Wow. Barely. So, but Bill, I know one that one person who passed away that we didn't get a chance to talk about on the show or anything before we get to our last two. I guess you could call this the Trinity here. Jonathan Demme.
Yeah. 73, complications of esophageal cancer and heart disease.
best known to horror fans, as you know, the man behind Silence of the Lambs, and which is a poignant film, and I know horror people like want to own it, but it's not a horror movie. But anyway,
It is.
it's not a horror. Oh, did we have? We always have that argument. You're wrong, Johnny. But anyway,
You're wrong.
he directed it. You punk. And yeah, I mean, gosh, it's that's an iconic film. He created he brought to life, you know, Hannibal Lecter in ways, you know, people didn't expect. And well, gosh, look what it led to.
Yeah, I mean, and Silence of the Lambs did win Best Picture for 1991, so
Yes, it did. God, that
so it
long
was
ago. Holy
I
shit.
know. I'm freaking old.
Chris Isaac's in it, man. He's the SWAT guy who shoots the guy in the leg in the elevator.
No, that's Daniel Von Bargen who shoots the guy in the
Really?
leg.
But Chris
Yeah.
Isaac's in it.
Chris Isaac's the guy who's standing at the bottom, like outside the elevator
Yeah,
doors, like
that's right.
he's on the comms.
That's right.
But yeah, Jonathan Demme was interesting. A film of his, it's not a horror, but it's definitely a great paranoid thriller. From the Bush 2 era was his remake of The Manchurian Candidate, which I think is really fantastic, actually. Hey, Vera Farmiga's in it, Bill. You got to see it.
I'm doing it now.
Yeah.
She's
But
so hyper delicious.
like a lot of other directors of like the 60s and 70s or that were just sort of striking out and getting their careers started, Roger Corman gave him the reins of films like Caged Heat and Crazy Mama, so
Wow, man.
sort of how he got his start, and
That is how
the
he got
rest.
his start, yeah. And then he went on
Yeah.
like Fighting Mad, Handle with Care, and then he did a Columbo episode, and it's like, what? What the hell? And he did the Talking Heads Once in a Lifetime live shoot. So
Yeah.
there he is. Wow, Swing Shift. Oh my God. He did a UB40 and Chrissie Hynde video. Holy
That's
crap.
right. Yeah, he did have a sort of side thing going
Yeah.
on, the music videos.
Yeah,
Yeah.
New Order, The Perfect Kiss.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And he directed three. Oh my gosh, he directed three Saturday Night Live episodes in the 80s, one hosted by Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh,
With the
wow.
Replacements, man. What a combo.
Well, it's almost as good as Donald Pleasence and Fear.
Oh, and
It's still blow. Yeah, go
I
ahead.
remember this episode too. He directed the one with Elliot Gould and Kid Creole and the Coconuts, man.
Oh, God.
Oh, he directed Swimming to Cambodia, which is brilliant.
Oh, I still need to see that. Yeah.
Oh man, he directed the New
Something.
Order Substance video too. Jeez Louise, man.
Something Wild, which I still need to see.
Yeah, but
Yeah.
Swimming to Cambodia, man.
No, I've heard it's.
Yeah, it's Spalding Gray at his absolute z best, man.
Because that was about his experiences working on Apocalypse Now,
Yeah,
right?
and it is phenomenal. Actually, on the Killing Fields.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And man, it's a must watch and listen. It's fantastic.
Bill, do you recommend seeing The Killing Fields before seeing the movie? I guess.
It's funny. I like Swimming to Cambodia more than the Killing Fields. And the
Oh,
Killing
okay.
Fields has a ton of impact. It's horrific what happened in Cambodia under Pol Pot, and you could listen to Dead Kennedys to it as well.
Oh,
And
yeah.
yeah, no, that it's a great film. But I just thought, you know, Swimming to Cambodia, just as a writer and all, it just knocked me out.
Nice. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely, man.
Well, Bill, the last two directors I have, and I'm guessing they're on. Do you have any others that you want to lift
No,
up?
no. These are the last two, Johnny. Keep going, bud.
And we're gonna do sort of what we did like with Bill Paxton. We're just gonna kind of say what these two, in our opinion, what we feel we'll remember them for. And I'll say first, Tobe Hooper. Many films in the horror genre. I think I said something when I wrote about him for Crash Palace that I kind of felt like he was a director who never maybe truly got his due for a multitude of reasons, perhaps. One thing you always hear about his films, especially in the 80s, well, even beyond that, were that they were the products of producer interference and, you know, backers dropping out and stuff like that, funding falling through. So, yeah, but in any case, I always thought he had a really interesting style that was really one of a kind. And no matter the quality of the movie, it always kind of shined through. Well, Bill, why don't you, what do you think? I think I know what you'll remember Tobe Hooper for most, but yeah.
Yeah, it's the one I have the movie poster for. But I almost want to say Poltergeist just to piss people off. because no, that was directed by Spielberg, you know, and it's like, just shut up and get over it.
I think you'll piss people more off with what you're going to
say.
I
think so. Yeah. Life Force, baby, and I don't give a shit. 1985, I still own the movie poster, mint condition. It's awesome. It's a blast. And as time goes on, more and more people are coming out and admitting, yeah, I like it. That's actually not bad. It's pretty good. It's got great special effects from John Dykstra. It's like Steve Railsback is in it. Friggin' Frank Finlay and just
Patrick Stewart.
Patrick Stewart with his first on-screen kiss. Matilda May. Then welcome to the world, Matilda May. And I think it is a trip and a half. I love it. Love, love it. So, yeah, what a loss. And I also, you know, Toolbox Murders. But anyway, go ahead, man.
You know, Bill, I think, you know, I don't think you're alone. I know I like to take the piss out of you with Life Force, but Scream Factory did put out a pretty sweet special edition of it a couple years back.
Yeah,
so obviously there was a demand to see that movie, you know, on Blu-ray with some nice special features. So
I'm hoping to reissue that so bad.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I'm going to fall back on what I wrote the article about for Crash Palace, and it's an episode of Masters of Horror, actually.
Wow, you skipped over to Mangler Man, huh?
Oh, you know what? It was a toss-up between three movies, yeah. But I freaking love Dance of the Dead, his first season contribution to that show. It's just... to me, it just epitomizes everything. Like, you know, Tobe Hooper at the peak of his wild and crazy powers as a filmmaker, just... in terms of story, character, aesthetic, it's got his signature stamp smeared all over it, and I love it. But it also showed how I think he kind of stayed in tune with kind of his younger, more anarchic kind of self, and maybe that was something that a lot of people weren't able to get behind with his subsequent films, like after Texas Chainsaw, is because he didn't like settle down like some filmmakers do, and like, oh, he didn't go mainstream really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was like consistently fucking shit up one way or another through his whole career.
Yeah.
And to me, that episode's kind of like the apex of that fucking shit up, but it's in a glorious fashion. Right. In my opinion. So I would say Dance of the Dead, and it's gotten a lot of crap over the years, but I think people should really check it out. So,
all right, man. And that's an excellent episode, man.
Did you see that one?
Oh, yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. So, and the last person we have is a Pittsburgh proud, George Romero.
Yep.
Often considered the godfather of the modern zombie.
Yeah, even though he didn't coin that, you know, the media did. He's like, I thought I created ghouls, and I thought he did too, but anyway, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Originally born in the Bronx, baby. And, yeah, he was just, you know, we did our show on George A. Romero. Please check that out as well, just like Tobe Hooper, because, you know, adored the man. He did so much. Like, anyone, I think, any young kid who loves horror and wants to pick up a camera and run out and make their own movie, he's the inspiration because he did that. You know, it's like, but I guess my go-to film for him would be, it's always been one of my favorites since early on, The Crazies from 1973.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And what about you, Johnny? Because I know you're a big, well, I'm not even going to say it. You say it.
You know what? I'm going to go with the obvious one, actually. And like you said, Bill, there's a lot to choose from. But
19, I think, actually.
Well, you know what? Yeah, you know, it always seemed like he made more. But you're right. He was kind of
18 features. You know, that's all he did, man.
Yeah, he and Hollywood kind of butted heads. He had a very specific idea of his artistry and how he wanted to do it. So I think he was less willing to compromise than some of his peers, actually. True.
But he did do it his way, and he still got a star in the Hollywood Hall of Walk of Fame. So
there you go. Yeah. I'm going to go with the obvious choice. 1968's Night of the Living Dead. Love it. You know, it was the first movie I ever saw from him, but it sort of kicked open so many doors when I was watching it, because I was like, oh, it's just some black and white movie. And then I'm like, oh, wait, they're eating people. Wait, there's blood spatter. Wait, people are dying and not everybody's having a happy ending here. I was like, it just sort of blew my mind at a young age with what he was doing with it. And of course, later on, it's like all that socio-political stuff that people read into it now, whether or not it's, you know, whether or not it ties into the events of the time or not. But yeah. But I'm really excited because the Criterion Collection is finally releasing this, and it's close to my birthday. So in February, it's going to be coming out on Blu-ray and probably a pristine edition. I love the cover art to it that they've come up with. So I've owned so many copies of that film, because unfortunately it's in the public domain, but I'll keep on buying it.
Yeah, and actually, I'm sorry, I correct myself. He directed only 16 features, and I guess a runner-up for me, as it is for other people, might be Martin. Incredibly intriguing film from 1978, and to find out more about that, you could listen to our former podcast on it.
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So, man, that's who we lost, man.
Yeah, yeah. But it feels good to talk about them. So
yeah, because they, as you said, Johnny, they do live on, and that's the important thing. They left a legacy, and we get to relish in their creations, and that's what matters most.
Movies are awesome because they'll just keep on lasting and lasting as long as people keep watching them. So
as long as the universe doesn't collapse upon itself. And
I mean, 2018, I've really got my doubts. So, yeah.
it sounds like it's scream out time to the living who we enjoy and love.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, here we go. First scream out. These are people you could follow on Twitter. Is David Wild with an E49. He's a filmmaker and actor. His current projects are the crime series that you could find on Twitter as Crime Lord Serial. It's also available on Amazon Prime in January 2018. Also, CB Killers. Check that out. You could watch that right now on Amazon Prime. And also go to Showreel Shorts for more from David Wild. He's fantastic. Check out his work. Scare Me on Fridays. Who is that? That's Symmetra Rhodes. And she says, I also have a silent movie blog, which is cool, and it's called Silent Weirdness. And it's spelled wrong on purpose. That's W-I-E-R. And you could check her out on scaremefridays.blogspot.com. She's fantastic. Midnight Horror Show. Who are they? That's Spooky Movies, baby. So go to Spooky Movies on Twitter, and also go to midnighthorrorshow.com. It's a horror film review site where they'll review your film, or just sign in to rate and review some of your favorite horror films. Halo Girl 22, she is the muse, and the problem, and I love this, the problem with this world is that too many mouths are open while too many eyes remain closed, and that's all you need to know. The fantastic Guy Ricketts with two T's, storyteller through writing, art, and photography. He is, you can go to his writing page, iamthatwriterguy.simplesite.com, and also go to guyricketts.artistwebsites.com. The fantastic horror fan 66, who is that? That is Kelly, capital L, lowercase a, 1998. And as she says, step over to the dark side, I got cookies. And Lily C Nation 02, and she says, welcome my lovely lilies to the Shakowin tape top. What the hell is that? I'm sorry, I don't even know what that is. Tape top. Please check out my YouTube channel. Have any stories you want to read, let her know by DM, and check her out. Lily C Nation 02. Nick Yonker, and that is N. Yonker, and that's Younker. Dark fiction scribe and horror news journalist. He's also a shameless reader and a smartass. He is a smartass who loves horror movies, pizza, and trees. And you can check him out at FogstoJameson.com. The great, great people at Nonprofit Horror. They're awesome. All about free horror promotion. Just tag us in your post and we'll retweet it. Anything horror related goes. And where are they? Under your bed. This woman is phenomenal. Jackie Lantern. And you can follow her at Jack, J-A-C-Q, Zero Lantern. She's the Halloween Queen. She's been on Crypt TV, Dread Central, Horror Freak News, ABC News, Elite Daily, Pop Horror News, wow. Houses Octobuilt for Houses October Built too. You go to her website, JackieLantern.com. She is a makeup artist extraordinaire. Her special effects makeup is really phenomenal, and she does these excellent videos of her work, and it's just incredible what she can create in such short order. The great John, the other John from Johnny Numb. John, John's Horror Corner.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, MFF Horror Corner. Horror lover, movie critic, film collector, podcaster. Check out Movies, Flicks, and Film. I did it wrong again! I'm reading it directly! Movies, Films, and Flicks. God, fuck. Dude, I practiced this shit. Oh, my God. I'm doomed to screw it up forever.
Oh, I was waiting for it. I was waiting.
God, I knew you were. You were laughing. You set me off, you bastard. MFF Horror Corner at Movies, Films, and Flicks with an X.com. Son of a bitch. The last person on my list tonight is your number one Carolina girl, Jean Jones, and she's at One Carolina Girl. She's a mom first, but she loves horror, Michael Myers, The Walking Dead, Metallica. And you can follow her at Instagram.com. One Carolina Girl. She's amazing. So I'm winded now. So that's it, Johnny.
That's it.
Where can people find you, my friend?
You can find me on Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. And you can also find my movie reviews at loudgreenbird.com. Billy, take us out of here.
Okay, I am. We're leaving. And you could follow me at CrashPalaceProductions.com, where you'll find links to this wonderful show, The Last Knock, which is also on iTunes. And you'll also find links to excellent stories from wonderful people, articles rather, like Johnny Numb, Randy Broska, Paul J. Williams, who I'm seeing for lunch tomorrow, and more.
Hey, awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
Isn't that cool? And also, you can follow me on Twitter at Crash Palace. And more news to come because of the new... Crash Palace website, which is brought to you by the amazing Brian Yount, Yount.com, for all of your website needs. And also the artwork in there is from our very own, the man, the myth, the living artist, legend, Greg Palko at PalkoDesigns.com.
Yes.
So thank you to those two gentlemen and for everyone for your support.
Yes. Thank you all for listening.
All right, buddy. We're out of here.
All right, see you, Bill.
All right, bud. Bye.
Bye.